Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I'm glad you're here because today we are doing something that I frankly love doing. We are stripping away the noise. Usually we have these massive piles of reports, data sheets, maybe a news article or two, and we try to synthesize this whole narrative. But
Today is different.
today we have a laser focus.
It is a bit of a departure, isn't it? Instead of going wide, we are going deep.
Really deep.
Yeah.
Exactly. We are looking at a single dense intellectual fragment. We are looking at chapter two,
Just chapter two.
specifically chapter two of a text titled Scientific Discourse on Perlite Formation and Analysis. And before you say, okay, that sounds like a dry afternoon, let me stop you.
Right.
Because when you actually look at why a text like this exists, and specifically why these two concepts, formation and analysis, are bundled together in a scientific discourse, it opens up a fascinating can of worms.
That is the key right there. It's the discourse part that grabs me. If this were just a manual, it would be titled, How to Make Perlite. But scientific discourse implies a debate. It implies that even something as fundamental as perlite,
Which is a staple.
it's a total staple of material science,
Yeah.
is still subject to interpretation, to argument, and evolving methodology.
Right. And for our listeners who live and breathe this stuff, they know perlite isn't new. We aren't discovering a new element here.
Not at all.
But the fact that we have a dedicated chapter two focused specifically on the science of its formation and analysis suggests that the story isn't over.
It really does.
It suggests that the how and the why are still matters of active investigation.
Precisely. And the positioning is everything. Think about the structure of a standard scientific text. Chapter one is almost always definitions, basic concepts, maybe some history.
The intro stuff, yeah.
By the time you hit chapter two, the gloves are off. You are entering the engine room. This is where the author stops holding your hand and starts, dismantling the machinery to show you how it works.
So let's walk into that engine room. We have two main gears turning here, according to our source title. Formation and analysis. Let's start with the first one, perlite formation. Now, in a lot of engineering contexts, we kind of take formation for granted. You heat it, you cool it, you get the structure.
Right, it was a recipe.
But this text is framing it as a subject of discourse. What does that tell us about the complexity of what's actually happening during that phase transformation?
It tells us that it's not just a switch being flipped. Formation, in this context, is a dynamic, multivariable process.
Okay.
When the text groups formation into a scientific discourse, it's signaling that we are looking at the mechanism of the transformation, not just the result.
The process
The
itself.
process itself. We're talking about nucleation. We're talking about growth rates. We are talking about the thermodynamic tug of war that allows this specific lamellar structure to emerge from the austenite.
And that's a critical distinction. It's the difference between, say, cooking dinner and understanding the chemistry of the Maillard reaction.
That's a great analogy.
One gets you fed, the other explains why the steak turns brown. This chapter two seems to be concerned with the chemistry, or, well, the kinetics of the reaction.
Exactly. And think about why that warrants a discourse. If the formation were simple, if it happened the same way every time, regardless of conditions, there wouldn't be much to talk about.
Right, to be a footnote.
The fact that we are diving into a discourse on formation implies that there are competing theories, or at the very least, really complex variables that dictate the outcome.
Like what?
Well, are we looking at diffusion-controlled growth? Are there interface limitations? These are the kinds of questions that a scientific discourse on formation tackles.
It also implies that the formation isn't visible to the naked eye, right?
No.
It's happening at a scale and a speed that requires a theoretical framework just to comprehend.
That's a fantastic point.
I can't just watch it happen like a slow motion video.
No, not without some serious difficulty, which I'm sure we'll get to in the analysis section. The formation is a theoretical
We're at
reconstruction.
a reconstruction.
We see the end product, the perlite, and we have to work backward to figure out how the atoms arrange themselves into that specific pattern. That reconstruction is what constitutes the science here.
I love that. It's a detective story.
It is. You have the body, which is the perlite, and you're trying to figure out the timeline of events that led to it.
And since this is chapter two, I imagine this is setting the foundation for everything else in the text.
Absolutely.
If you don't understand the mechanism of formation, the crime scene timeline, to use your metaphor, you can't really predict the properties later on.
You really can't.
Yeah.
And that is why formation comes first in the title, and I assume in the chapter structure. is the origin story.
Right.
But it's an origin story written in the language of thermodynamics and kinetics. The discourse is likely about refining that story. Maybe the old models didn't account for certain impurities or cooling rates or stress states. This text is likely presenting the most current, rigorous version of that timeline.
So we have this complex, invisible, dynamic process of formation. That's Act 1 of Chapter 2. But the title doesn't stop there. It couples formation immediately with analysis. And I find that pairing really interesting.
It is interesting.
It's not formation and properties or formation and applications. It's formation and analysis. Why link those two so tightly?
Because in material science, they are effectively the same problem viewed from different angles. You cannot propose a theory of formation without a method of analysis to verify it.
Okay.
And you cannot design a method of analysis without understanding what you are looking for, which comes from your theory of formation. They're locked in a feedback loop.
It's the chicken and the egg.
It is, but it's more than that.
Yeah.
By titling the discourse Formation and Analysis, the source is suggesting that our ability to understand the creation of perlite is limited only by our ability to measure it.
Our tools limit our theory.
Exactly. The analysis here isn't just taking a picture. It's the rigorous validation of the formation theories we just talked about.
So when I'm talking about analysis in the context of this chapter too, we aren't talking about a quality control check. We aren't just seeing if the steel is hard enough.
No, definitely not. In a scientific discourse, analysis refers to characterization. It means using microscopy, diffraction, maybe spectroscopy, to probe the structure at the fundamental level.
Okay.
The text is likely exploring how we define perlite quantitatively. What is the interlamellar spacing? How does that spacing correlate with the cooling rate? The analysis is the tool set we use to decode the formation.
And that implies that the analysis itself is non-trivial. If it were easy, it wouldn't be part of the discourse.
It would just be a footnote. Figure one, here is the perlite.
Right. But by elevating analysis to the title alongside formation, it suggests that how we look at the material is just as controversial or complex as how the material formed.
That is a very sharp observation. In fact, a lot of scientific discourse in this field centers entirely on artifacts of analysis.
What do you mean by artifacts?
Well, are we seeing what is really there, or are we seeing what our sample preparation created? Are we interpreting the 2D cross-section correctly as a representation of the 3D structure? When the source couples these two, it's warning the reader. Do not trust the formation theory unless you understand the analysis method.
That's a powerful warning. It's skepticism, but weaponized.
That is what science is, essentially. Organized skepticism.
Right.
And chapter 2 is teaching the reader how to be skeptical. It's saying, here is how we think it forms, and here are the analytical limits of how we know that.
Which brings us back to that word discourse. I want to drill down on this because I think it's the most important word in the source title.
I agree.
We aren't looking at a guide. We aren't looking at a summary. We are looking at a discourse. That word carries weight. It feels distinct.
It does. A guide implies settled law. A guide tells you what to do. A discourse invites you to think.
Yeah.
It implies that the reader is expected to engage with the material, not just memorize it. It suggests that there are nuances, exceptions, and varying schools of thought.
So treating perlite formation and analysis as a discourse fundamentally changes how you read the text.
It has to.
You aren't looking for the right answer. You are looking for the current state of the argument.
Exactly. And usually when you see a title like this, it means the author is synthesizing a lot of different viewpoints. They might be comparing classical nucleation theory with more modern observations. They might be contrasting optical analysis with electron microscopy results.
Mm-hmm.
The discourse is the bridge between the raw data and the human understanding of it.
And that fits perfectly with the idea of this being chapter two. If chapter one defines the terms, chapter two frames the argument, it sets the boundaries of the sandbox we are playing in. Here is what we know, here's what we suspect, and here's how we measure the difference.
Right. And for the listener, the takeaway here is that perlite isn't just a static thing that exists on a shelf. It's a process. And our understanding of it is also a process.
A human process.
The scientific discourse is the record of that understanding evolving over time.
I want to touch on the science aspect of the prompt again. Discuss the science. We've talked about the philosophy of it, but let's get concrete about what this chapter two is likely asking the reader to do.
Okay.
When you study the science of formation and analysis, you are essentially learning a language.
You are. You are learning the language of phase transformations. You are learning to read a microstructure like a history book.
Ah, I like that.
When you look at a micrograph of perlite, that classic fingerprint pattern, you aren't just seeing lines. You are seeing cooling rates. You are seeing carbon diffusion. You are seeing the history of the heat treatment.
Wow.
The science this source covers is the Rosetta Stone that lets you translate those visual patterns back into thermal history.
And the analysis section of the chapter provides the grammar for that language.
That is a beautiful way to put it, yes. Yeah. Formation is the story. Analysis is the grammar.
Okay.
If your analysis is sloppy, if your grammar is bad, you misinterpret the story. You might think the material was cooled slowly when actually it was cooled continually. You might mistake one phase for another.
So the stakes are high.
The text emphasizes analysis because without rigorous measurement, your story about formation is just fiction.
Fiction, that's dangerous in engineering.
It's catastrophic in engineering. That's why the discourse matters. We need to agree on the science so bridges don't fall down. But in the context of this specific source, it's about the intellectual rigor of establishing truth in a physical system.
It's interesting, isn't it? We usually think of discourse as something that happens in the humanities.
Right, literature or politics.
Yeah, you have a discourse on literature, but a scientific discourse on perlite. It reminds us that hard science is also a human endeavor. It's people arguing over evidence.
It absolutely is. And the evidence is hard to get. That's why the analysis part is so prominent. We are dealing with things that happen at the atomic scale, at high temperatures, buried inside solid muddle.
You can't just look at it.
You have to infer it. And inference requires debate, hence discourse.
So if we zoom out a bit, we've established that Chapter 2 is the foundation. It's the Mechanisms and Methods chapter. Why is it important for someone, even an expert, to revisit this? Why not just skip to the Applications chapter?
Because you can't troubleshoot if you don't understand the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
If you skip the scientific discourse on formation and just go to the How to Heat Treat chapter, you're flying blind.
Mm.
When something goes wrong, when the perlite doesn't form correctly or the properties are off, you have no mental model to rely on.
You're just stuck.
You're just following a recipe that failed.
Right. You're the cook who can't fix the sauce because he doesn't know what an emulsion is.
Exactly. This chapter 2 is teaching you what the emulsion is. It's giving you the first principles understanding so that when the real world throws you a curveball, you can analyze it.
There's that word again.
And understand how the formation process deviated from the ideal.
So reading this deep dive on formation and analysis is really about building a robust mental model. It's about internalizing the science, so it becomes intuition.
Intuition is just internalized discourse, right?
I guess so.
Once you understand the arguments, the mechanisms, and the pitfalls of analysis, you can look at a piece of steel and see the formation history without needing the textbook.
But you have to earn that.
You only get there by wading through the dense stuff first. You have to go through chapter 2 to get to the mastery.
It's the gatekeeper.
It's a gatekeeper.
And a necessary one.
I want to pivot slightly to the structure of the title again. Scientific Discourse on Perlite Formation and Analysis. It's very singular.
Yeah.
It focuses on perlite, not steel microstructures, not phase transformations in general, just perlite. What does that specificity signal to you?
It signals depth. If you have a whole discourse dedicated just to perlite, it means perlite is a universe unto itself. It's not just one of many things, it's the main character.
Okay.
It implies that the complexity of this specific structure is high enough to warrant its own focused discussion. It warns the reader, don't underestimate this. Don't underestimate this. Mm-hmm. I like that. It's so easy to gloss over the basics, but this source is saying, no, stop. Look closer. There is more here than you think.
There is always more. That's the rule of fracture mechanics, that's the rule of thermodynamics, and it's clearly the rule of this text. The closer you look, the better your analysis, the more complex the formation appears.
So we've unpacked the formation, the mechanism, we've unpacked the analysis, the measurement,
right,
and we've unpacked the discourse, the debate. It seems like chapter 2 is doing a lot of heavy lifting.
It is. It's likely the dense core of the entire work. It's the chapter you read 3 times.
Oh, yeah.
First to get the words, second to get the concepts, and third to really understand the implications.
And for our listeners, that's the takeaway. When you encounter a source like this, a scientific discourse, don't just mine it for data points.
Please don't.
Don't just look for the number you need. Engage with the argument. Understand why the formation is described the way it is. Understand the limitations of the analysis being presented.
Right. Don't just consume the science. participate in the discourse. Even if you're just reading it, you are part of that conversation. You are weighing the evidence.
That's a really empowering way to look at technical reading. You aren't a passive vessel, you're a juror.
You are a juror, and the text is presenting the case. Chapter 2 is the opening argument for the defense of the theory.
I think that's a perfect place to land on the synthesis of this. We've taken a very specific, very academic title and realized that it's actually a call to action for critical thinking.
It really is.
It's asking us to validate the how through the lens of the measure.
And to recognize that neither is perfect. That's the humility of science.
Mm.
We refine our analysis to get a better view of formation, which challenges our theories, which demands better analysis. The wheel keeps turning.
The wheel keeps turning. And hopefully for our listener, this deep dive has greased that wheel a little bit. We've managed to discuss the science without getting bogged down in the jargon, but without ignoring the complexity either.
We've respected the complexity. That's the goal.
Before we sign off, I want to leave you with a final thought. We spent this time talking about the scientific discourse on perlite. We know it forms, and we know we analyze it. But here's the provocative question. If our methods of analysis change, if we invent a new microscope, a new way of seeing, does the formation change?
That is the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
The physical reality might not change, but our understanding of it, the formation as a scientific concept, absolutely changes. The map is not the territory.
The map is not the territory. So as you go about your week, think about that. Are you looking at the territory or are you just looking at your map? And is it time to update the map?
Always time to update the map.
Thank you for joining us on this exploration of Chapter 2. It's been a pleasure dissecting the discourse with you.
Same here. A fascinating dive.
We'll see you on the next one. Keep analyzing.